This time of year, a good hoodie is absolutely essential. But it's tough to find one that will last through the season. That's why the American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last a lifetime. So you can count on it to bring you comfort and warmth year after year. Slate Magazine called it the greatest hoodie ever made. And from cotton to zipper, it's made right here in the USA. With timeless style, heavyweight fleece, a double-lined hood, and reinforced elbow patches, you can depend on it for years to come. Snag the hoodie that will bring you comfort for life, the American Giant Classic Full Zip, and save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use code CLASSIC24 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code CLASSIC24.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey Blenders, it's Sean O'Connell, the managing editor at Cinema Blend and a co-host of the Real Blend podcast. I hope everybody is enjoying some time off with friends and family during this holiday season. But we wanted to bring you guys, while you're shopping or going through those last minute holiday details, maybe you want to throw on a podcast and listen to an interview that we were able to do on behalf of the new film Nosferatu by Robert Eggers. We have two of the film's stars, the great Willem Dafoe and the outstanding Bill Skarsgård, who plays Nosferatu in the film. Tried hard to get Eggers on this, but jumped at the opportunity to get a chance to speak with these two actors. Very, very important to the overall impact of the film. Obviously, with Willem having some history with the Nosferatu role, the Dracula character, and he talks about that a bit in the podcast. And then Bill and the amount of work that he put into bringing this iconic character to life on screen. Obviously, Bill has some experience with this, doing Pennywise in the Andy Muschietti adaptations of the Stephen King book It. He was in The Crow also earlier this year, but he's ending the year really strong with Nosferatu, and we were thrilled to get these guys on. Normally, we have stuff drop on a Wednesday. Obviously, this week being Christmas, we knew that was going to be a really important day for everybody. So we wanted you guys to have this one early. So this is, again, without further ado, the Real Blend interview on behalf of Nosferatu with actors Willem Dafoe and Bill Skarsgård, ready to go into your ears.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you for taking the time. And I'm going to start out with a big nerdy question. I feel like one of the commonalities between the original 22 film and this film, and even Shadow the Vampire, is the practical shadow work. I'm sort of in awe of watching it work, knowing that most of them, I believe, are done in real life or done practically. I'd love to know each of your own experiences in the shadow work on this film and in Shadow the Vampire. And is there anything that you sort of impressed you sort of seeing it actually happen and not really, as far as I know, need CGI in a way?
Yeah, it's the I'll let you know that all the shadow work in the movie is performed by me. And it was interesting, and of course, like, you know, you sit by yourself at home trying to like do it. Yeah. but it's, this movie is so incredibly practical. Like, there's very little CGI, and Robert tries to capture as much as he can within the frame. So I would be sitting like behind the camera, and they had rigged the Sharon's beautifully lit sort of rig of the shadow coming up, and I would watch Lily Rose Depp's beautiful performance, and just kind of out of all of the days shooting, those were the most relaxed from my perspective.
You mentioned being at home and practice. Like, is that like a real thing? Do you really go home and try to figure out like what the shadow of your own hand is going to look like?
Yeah. And we also, yes. And we also, we had camera tests that was specifically for the shadow work. So with Robert and Jared, the cinematographer, and we were like, okay, and like, how, you know, we're everything had to be figured out beforehand. So it was actually a lot of work going into it. And then how the hand moves and, you know, the extensions of the fingers and, you know, voila, you know.
It's unbelievable. I know that technology and movie making is always changing and it's always evolving, but I am sort of curious if there's some degree of commonality of things that just are the way they are and they don't have to change that much. So Mr. Defoe, I'd love to know, I'm sure you've heard Bill talk a lot about his makeup process, and I was wondering if it was at all comparable to what you went through when you played Max Schreck. Was there any sort of, is there that big of a difference in 20 years of a filmmaking advancement, or do you think his experience was a little similar to yours?
It sounds similar. Just if you, I mean, they're different characters and the application is different. And his was a full body thing. But the time was similar. And, you know, obviously some things have been probably improved as far as, you know, certain applications and that sort of thing. But as far as the application generally, yeah, a lot of time spent putting pieces on you and then painting them and then blending them and, you know, things for the hands, the fingernails, things for the body, corsets, you know, things like that. It's similar. I mean, believe me, I thought Bill in the chair.
you mentioned that you said that there are probably some advancements that have been made. Nicholas told me something, Bill, I'm sort of curious. He said that there is like a hole that they have to punch in because by nature of being buried under all this makeup, you start to sweat. And he said whenever he did X-Men that they had to sort of punk, like poke a hole in the makeup to let the sweat out. I'm sort of curious if they did that for you as well. And then is that a fairly new device? I'd never heard that before.
Yeah. Nick was, you know, he's such a sweet guy. And he was, when we were on set, you know, first, second day of shooting, and we, the long scene where Orlok is introduced to or where Thomas is introduced to Orlok rather, and he would just go, hey Bill, between takes, do you want to, where's your hole? He was like, I know how uncomfortable this is. And it's like, you know, he was like very compassionate about what I was going through, and I was just sitting there going, do you want some water, Bill? And I'm like, leave me alone. But he was very sweet about it, because he had done it, and so he knows how uncomfortable it can be. In terms of the sweat, not on the face, there was nothing on the face. Everything is like, I'm covered in latex, full body. It's the only surface of me is my eyeballs and the soles of my feet. That was the only thing, and everything was covered. And when we were doing the sort of the finale of the final moment of the movie, we did 30 takes of it, and without spoiling it, it's a lot of physical performance. So you're completely exhausted and you're sweating through. What started happening, because there was nowhere for the sweat to escape, it just created this just giant bubble on my stomach. Like, it just started growing like a tumor, and then between takes they had to pierce it. Just like
Hollywood's so glamorous.
Oh yes. And then on top of that, fake blood and sweat and saliva, and it was a gory mess.
I really need to see like the behind the scenes, like Heart of Darkness documentary about the making of this movie. I asked Mr. Eggers a similar question, but because of you guys have this amazing connection, I'd love to ask both of you, if you could sit down and ask Max Schreck anything, what is the thing that you would ask him about this character, just to get his perspective on what he thought the character was or how he thought he was going to approach the character?
Are you a real vampire, Max Schreck?
You know, I saw a movie about that once.
Yeah,
I don't know. Max Schreck was famous for being a journeyman actor that did lots of things. And he, after Nosferatu was done, he lamented that he couldn't get work anymore, because he was so, even though he's very much covered in makeup, he was totally associated with that character, and it kind of destroyed his career.
And he passed away not long after, right? In the 30s, or like 10 years past or something. It was like early era film making, mm-hmm. I don't know what I would have asked.
The makeup
killed him. Exactly.
that's an interesting fear, though, that I feel like sometimes we don't really think about from our perspective. Is that an ever constant fear as an actor to be? I mean, you guys have done so much work now that I don't really think it's anything that you guys have to worry about. But when you start out in the business, is there that conscious fear of like, okay, I got to make sure that I'm not just this one guy?
Oh, you mean as far as, I think I experienced that when I was younger. I mean, when I first started out, you know, everybody wanted to cast me as a bad guy. And that was fun. That was fun because, you know, it's kind of a guilty pleasure and you have strong actions. And if you aren't conventionally handsome or conventionally, you know, if you aren't the boy next door, it's sometimes the juiciest roles, the most active roles, the most dramatic roles are the bad guys. So I didn't mind it. But you like to, you know, challenge yourself and you like to have the possibility, not as a vanity thing, but, you know, to think that, you know, you can be flexible. You can experience different things. That's one of the beautiful things of being an actor. You get to imagine being other people or imagine other people's, you know, lives. So at the beginning, I was very conscious of that. And also, I was working with a theater company, so I, you know, I had to really be careful about selection because I couldn't go away from the theater much. But then that changed with time. I felt like because I mixed it up, big films and small films, it was able to break that a little bit. But still, it depends, you know. For larger films, they kind of want you to do that thing that you think that thing that you do or that thing that they think is coming off you. And then your opportunities tend to be more in more independent movies. But with time, some of those independent movies break through and people start to imagine you in other ways to see you broader.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm in an earlier stage of my career than the great Willem Dafoe. But I've, you know, and I get the question, I keep getting this question. It's like, oh, are you the horror guy? Or are you just going to, you know, whatever. And I'm like, I've done most of my movies are not horror films,
yeah.
But those are the ones that break through. And I have done a lot of darker roles and sort of anti-heroes or villains or whatever, but also a lot of other roles. But I think for me, and this has been a thing for me, at least growing up, and my approach to acting is like I really never wanted to be vain and be a vain performer. So I never understood actors who wanted to play the cool guy or wanted to be the man, you know, and they were only seeking out characters that made them look good as people, you know,
right.
And that kind of vanity. And that was something that I saw in actors working. And I work with actors that are like that. And I was like, I don't want to be that. So almost kind of counteracting that to exploring the weird people, the people that are wrong, that are off, that are outsiders, that are rejects, that are, you know, I feel like I
different perspective
and complicated perspective,
yeah.
Morally complicated perspective is what is inspiring to me. And I don't want, you know, don't want to be ruled by vanity or ego in that sense.
I'm totally down with what he's saying. You know, and the other thing is, generally, I mean, there are lots of shades in between, but the black and white of it is some actors, and I don't have a judgment about this because they're both, you know, good ways to go. Some actors really want to kind of create a persona and they seek material that supports that persona.
Sure,
and
yeah.
Sometimes they can use it beautifully. Mm-hmm. They can use that iconographically and use it to make some wonderful movies. But it sounds like from what Bill just said, and I relate to this, I'm the other kind of actor that really wants to bend myself to the material, mm-hmm. you know, go to the material rather than have the material support me. In mm-hmm. fact, sometimes I even like to go towards stuff that I don't quite relate to, but there's a little itch there. There's something that's curious about it, or maybe the director is really interesting and I don't quite get it, but I want to go towards it. And that going towards that usually provides you with a kind of adventure and something that really ultimately engages you, rather than presenting something that you know you can do or something that you just enjoy immediately or you know you're going to be good at. It's an interesting game. Different people play it different ways, and that I have no problem with that. But I think I noticed that it makes me nervous when stuff is too perfect for me. Like, this is made for you. This is who you are. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what you'd be really good at. That's why often when people say, hey, what kind of role do you want to play? And it's like, I don't know. I want to play the role that I don't know what it is yet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This episode of Real Blend is brought to you by Rosetta Stone. The holiday season is here, and what makes a better gift than one that keeps on giving, like a lifetime membership to Rosetta Stone? It's perfect for anyone looking to learn or improve their language skills. Rosetta Stone has been trusted for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. It's designed for long-term retention with no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. And it's available on desktop and mobile, so you can continue to learn whenever and wherever is best for you. Give your family and friends the gift of language with 50% off all 25 languages for a lifetime and no shipping fees. RealBlend listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off when you visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I think that's one of the reasons, and I'm not blowing smoke, but one of the reasons I love.
I have blown smoke.
I promise. Like, whenever I know that you're casting a part and you're going to be in a movie I'm about to see, I get excited because I think I can't wait to see what they're going to do with this part. Not I'm excited because I know what they're going to do. It's more I'm excited because I don't know what they're going to do. So I appreciate you guys. Thank you for answering that. I think one of the most interesting things about the original 22 Nosferatu is whether people realize it or not, how big of an influence it's had on pop culture. I did not realize that the whole vampire dying because of sunlight came from Nosferatu, did not come from Bram Stoker's Dracula novel. And I think one of my original introductions to the character into Max Schreck was Christopher Walken played a character named Max Schreck in a Batman film, which I had, at the time, I had no idea. Do you think that more, even though I would argue a lot of people probably have not seen the original 22 film, people are impacted by its influence without maybe even realizing that they're impacted by its influence?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yes. It's seminal, and I was my dad introduced me to the 1922 movie when I was a kid, and we would watch movies, and he would show me movies that he liked, and we had a sort of phase of watching silent film movies, and mostly Chaplin and like Buster Keaton and stuff like that. But then we also watched Nosferatu, and he contextualized it for me as a child, going. Explain to me what the fact that all the negatives were ordered to be burnt because it was copyright infringement on Bram Stoker's novel. But some of them survived, and it changed film history forever. Like, not only is it probably the first horror film ever made, it's a time that, you know, only 10 years before the movie came out, there's this, you know, the infamous story of the train coming towards this, mm-hmm. and everybody in the audience were running out thinking that the train's going to run them over. So within that context, and then you look at this movie and how genuinely terrifying it still is, like, you can only imagine how new this medium was, and people had never been scared in that way, and monsters, prosthetics, everything. It's in a lot of ways, it's the birth of horror film cinema, you know.
One of the interesting things working on this is because Robert is so well researched, and so much in this Nosferatu is really based on folk legends and tales from a time where people really believed in vampires. So it's very rooted in fact, and that against the cinema tropes of vampires that have been created through the years has been really fascinating. Probably one of the greatest examples is there's no evidence; it's total invented that vampires drink blood from the neck, for example, mm-hmm. where there is some historical fact that people believed they used to drink from the chest, which is nice because the heart and little things like that. It's interesting to see what was created for the purposes of cinema and what was rooted in the beliefs of the people and how that the origins of these things. It was pretty fascinating.
Yeah,
No, please.
No, I was just gonna add to it, and I mean that is what our Orlok is, you know. It's in approaching the material and getting access to a lot of the research that Robert had done. You know, I read the script before I did the research many years ago, and then I started researching it, and I'm like, oh, okay, yes, a naked maiden on a horse. Like, this is like all of these things that you see in the film are actual based off of Transylvanian folklore, and you know, Robert wanted to use the Transylvanian folkloric beliefs and then combining it with Nosferatu or Dracula, really, who's a character that's not of Transylvanian folklore, and everything from how the character looks and how he feeds and all of that is inspired and based off of actual folkloric beliefs, and that those melding, the blending those together is the result of the character that you see, which is why it's a unique interpretation of Dracula and portrayal of that character.
Well, you mentioned I perfectly leads into, because I had to talk about that, like the feeding, the fact that Count Orlok feeds from the chest, which I think has yielded probably maybe the best sound design of any movie this year. Just the sound of him feeding is.
Yeah.
It's the greatest. I'd love to know the first time you guys heard that. Was it in the finished product? And also, Bill, just the physicality of doing that. It is a physical act, man. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, the physical act was like, you know, and I think it's one of the scariest images of the film is when the full body shot of Orlok feeding on Thomas, it was 6 hours in the chair, and it was one setup. So we came in, the camera was, you know, this is the frame, so it was 6 hours in the chair. We shot it in 30 minutes and then I was done. But in terms of what I was doing in performing it, it's the movement of the body, of just seeing this leech-like thing pulsating, was what we wanted to achieve. And that's what we worked on for it. And it looked absolutely horrific. I mean, I would go and look at the monitors, and because when you do something that is that sort of physically performative, it's good to go and look at the monitor, go, oh, you know, I see that my hip is too high or whatever, and Robert would explain, and you kind of dial in the performance to be as effective as possible. And it looked absolutely horrific. But then when you see the movie and you add the sound to it, it's just like, you know.
Do you have any of that?
I've seen it when I was with audiences, and you know, my Alita, my partner, and she watched it, and that was like, oh, she was so incredibly repulsed by it. Like, she couldn't watch it. She couldn't really watch it. She was sitting like this the whole film.
Is that the ultimate review? Whenever you bring like when you bring a loved one and then they turn away. Is that the ultimate? Like, oh, we got it.
I mean, it's people are different, right? Like, some people turn away, and some people actually look lean in.
I'm the lean in type for whatever reason, for all that implies.
I tend to lean in.
Obviously, this is a character that, by nature of having seen it a couple of times over the last 100 plus years, we've gotten different filmmakers' interpretation, different actors' interpretation. So that yields a bigger question, Mr. Defoe. And you may very well hate this question. I would love to know a character that you've played that you would just love to see how another actor might interpret that person in 100 years or so.
Oh, Jesus. That's a really... There's too much imagination in that question. I don't know.
I'll
be dead. I don't care. No.
Hypothetically, if you could...
Have at it. Yeah, go. Do them all. Have fun. Enjoy. Don't worry about me. I'm just resting.
I shouldn't have said 100 years. I messed up the question right there.
No, I wish I was clever, but I'm not clever that way. I save my any clever little cleverness I have for other things. Sorry.
Fair enough. I figured you guys are in the middle of long press days, trying to throw some stuff at you that you haven't heard 10,000 times.
It's just that.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it too. I would like to see you, or I would like to dare to play you, or whatever, in Willem's wonderful repertoire. I mean, yeah, that's
would Lily be playing? Yes, for too. Let's do a little gender shift.
Yeah,
and you play Lily's role.
Yes.
I'm down for this. I want to talk about, as an actor, when you are developing a voice, not necessarily the craft of doing it, but I'd love to know when you guys know it's time to stop, because, you know, they often, you know, filmmakers often talk about, well, you know, I'm not done with the movie, but it had to be out by a certain date. Or whenever I edit new stories, I always think I could keep editing this story, but it's got to air on Tuesday. At what point do you know I've got it and I'm done. I don't need to work on it anymore.
For me, on this one, like, never. Like, I never felt I was done. I think that, you know, I wanted the voice to be performed the way it was going to play. Like, because we were talking about, like, we could digitally lower it or enhance it post. And I was like, okay. And I just didn't like the idea of it. Like, I wanted to achieve it as I wanted to achieve reaching there myself. But I was also like, when we were shooting and I was like, I knew that we could go into the ADR studio and like redo all the dialogue and like get it as perfect as possible or whatever. And I was actually surprised how little I had to ADR and how much of the performance is there. And Robert, you know, I didn't ADR much of any dialogue. So the dialogue that's in the movies, most of it is recorded in front of the camera on the stage. And that was kind of I don't know, that I was happy that I reached it there. But in terms of I never felt like I and even when we were doing it, I'm like, I fucking have gotten this better at home, and like, you know, when I'm lying down and I can really get access the whole body and make it resonate and so with this one, I never felt the process.
Yeah. I got to tell you, it's such a good voice that the first time I heard it, my knee-jerk reaction was, oh, did they get someone else to do his voice? Like, did they not let Bill do it. Like, I hope you take that in the compliment, the way it's like, I just didn't think that that was in any way possibly you.
Yeah. We had a little sort of a private premiere in Stockholm with friends and family. And there was a lot of friends of mine were like, so like, who did the voice? I was like, what did you think I was doing? Just a model.
I'll get you guys out of here on this. You mentioned, you know, growing up watching silent films and the silent film stars. I'd love to talk about the value of silence for an actor. When you're given a moment without dialogue and you're left to just your eyes or your face or your body language, how much of a challenge is that compared to having 3 pages worth of dialogue to get your point across?
I never think about getting my point across. I think about, engaging with certain actions or certain situations. So, you know, the truth is there's that classic thing where they say, if you can turn the sound off on a movie and know what's going on, then, you know, it's a good movie. It's a whole package. It doesn't cut up. But it's like, because you have dialogue doesn't mean you're leading with the voice. Your body is also engaged. Even though you're silent, your voice is still there. I don't know how to say it. It's not a black or white thing. I don't think you really treat a silent movie any different. You may lean on more gestural language, mm-hmm. but still, how you're sending it out there, what you're trying to accomplish, is probably about the same thing. Mm. Because it never works for me. One of the biggest difficulties in performing is when you've got to express something, to not indicate it, to live it, not indicate it, not point to it, not show it, you know, but do it. And there's a huge difference in that. So whether it's silent or whether there's text is an action. Text is a gesture too. The idea of I don't make that much difference. It's all performing. It's just the mode is different, but the being there and what you're trying to accomplish is exactly the same, I think.
You must have worked with directors who that one likes to do a silent take. Have you ever, like, you do the take without the dialogue?
No.
You never had? Oh, okay.
That sounds like good.
Yeah.
Good exercise.
Yeah. I work with the director who would do that. He would just, you know, you would do the scene and then we're like, okay, let's do one silent. So you do the scene without the dialogue.
That's a good idea.
And it's a fun exercise, and it's also good for coverage because you get reactions. I mean, you can use all of these reactions in the presence of being there. And it's just interesting to kind of to feel out a scene without the dialogue and feel sort of the physical elements of a scene and how you're performing it. I did a movie a couple of years ago, The Boy Kills World, where I'm mute and I don't have, like, it's a silent performance on my part. And that was interesting. And I would, for those scenes, cause he's speaking through his mind, through voiceover, you know, I would do the scene, perform the scene with the dialogue that's being read in the voiceover, and I would speak it, and then we would go, okay, go again, and then I would redo it silently. And then, you know, you do rely on different tools, like expressions become more important, and it's a little bit bigger, and you for sure see it in silent film era actors, nothing subtle about it. You know, it's very animated theatrical performances, because they didn't have the language to communicate through. And it's fun. I mean, when you did Shadow of a Vampire, right. You were like, I think you can see in that, in your, the way you performed it as well, that there is a silent film era expressiveness.
Yes. But again, when you talk about silent film, the traditions were just different.
Yeah.
I mean, because things are pitched for an audience a little bit. I don't know what the things have changed as far in terms of psychology and storytelling, and also just film language. It's so hard to compare
the two. But you have a film of art, a Caldre, or like that kind of that naturalistic, gorgeous performance from a non-actor, actually.
It's true.
Guys, this was my dream interview. Seriously, thank you guys for geeking out with me, for having just an awesome just cinema movie conversation. I love both of you guys. I love your work in this film, and I appreciate you indulging my nerdy questions. You guys are truly fantastic. I really do appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, appreciate it.
Good to see you guys. Take care.
Bye.
You too.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We want to thank our good friends at Focus Features and, of course, Willem and Bill for coming on the Real Blend podcast. Thrilled to have them on. They're welcome back anytime. You guys should definitely check out Nosferatu as it's making its way out to theaters. Kind of an unusual Christmas movie, I'll admit that, but a little counter-programming if you're tired of the Christmas staples, be it A Christmas Story or maybe Christmas Vacation. You guys want to head out, see something different, get into some gothic horror, filtered through the eyes, the very unique eyes of the director of The Lighthouse and The Northman. And you're absolutely going to want to see a score. Well, you know what? Actually, with this one, you're going to want to hear it. If you can go see Nosferatu, I would recommend you go see it in Dolby Atmos, because the way that they manipulate Skarsgård's voice and the work that he's doing on his own as well, too, as discussed in the interview, is really spectacular and really unnerving and makes really great use of the sound mix, which is, again, something that we talk about a lot on the show, is taking advantage of the tools that are available to a filmmaker, be it cinematography or lighting, which is also really important to Nosferatu, and the sound mix. So go see this one in Dolby. We do have an episode coming out on the 27th, so you want to make sure you're here for that. Hit subscribe and turn on notifications. We have Helena Rain, who is returning to the show. We had her on to discuss her horror film Bodies, 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 and now she has another movie coming to theaters, which you might have heard about, with Nicole Kidman, called Baby Girl. More counter-programming for the holiday season. Not necessarily one for the family, but one you're going to want to hear her discuss. So be back here when that episode drops to make sure you don't miss it. Hit subscribe, turn on your notifications. Thank you guys so much for supporting Real Blend throughout the year. That'll be our last episode dropping in 2024. Officially, we'll be back with brand new episodes in 2025. Heading into the year really, really strong and anticipating some really cool things, thanks to the support of you guys here in the Real Blend community. We appreciate you so much. Have a really wonderful holiday season. Happy New Year to everybody, and we will see you in January.